I'm really happy to get a chance to be here and to hear all of your other presentations. It's really wonderful to find out how much is going on with insects in the whole GK-12 program. What I really want to talk to today is about what happens when the GK-12 runs out, which is the scary reality for all of us. And first I'm going to tell you about the two different GK-12 programs that we have at the University of Arizona. And no, the solution is not to get another GK-12. That's not really the way to extend the program. I want to explain how the two different programs are and how we have created an outreach program that we hope can live beyond and separate from the GK-12. So the two programs are CATS and BioMe. And obviously an important part of getting a GK-12 is to have a cute acronym. And the CATS program is older. It was one of the early GK-12s. And it's very interdisciplinary. It's science, technology, engineering, and math graduate students. It also incorporated undergraduate students as fellows. I'm not sure you can do that anymore. And the fellows worked either in a K-12 classroom in a close partnership with a teacher, or they were working as partners to a University of Arizona-based outreach program that then went and visited schools or provided field trips or some other kind of outreach program. It's in its final year, and they really cannot be renewed anymore. The other GK-12 is a new one, and it's very different. It's absolutely disciplinary-focused. It's life science graduate students only. And their partnership is strictly within a K-12 classroom with one or at most two different teachers. And the other difference is that BioMe is really focusing on the idea of teaching biology at the K-12 level in the context of evolution. And if I have time, I'll explain what we mean by that or what we think we mean by that. I know we've already talked about the GK-12 and what the long-term goals are. The biggest goal is the training of graduate students, strengthening their scientific communication skills and teaching skills more generally. Then the second goal is enriching science, technology, engineering, and math content for the K-12 teachers and their students. There's encouraging broader participation in science, the idea that really you have to get kids excited about science long before they're thinking about college, where you'll have lost a lot of potentially wonderful scientists. And then actually the final goal, so what I'm going to really try to focus on a little bit more today, is this idea of creating a long-term connection between research institutions like universities and K-12 education. One of the ironies is that a lot of research institutions are completely separated from the K-12 communities that they're neighbors with. The kids have no idea what the researchers are doing, and the researchers really are very unconnected to the K-12 environment. So that's sort of the background, and now I want to talk about a very small solution, or what we hope will be a sustainable part of our university's outreach that was created through the CATS program, through our first GK-12 fellowship, and something that we believe can be sustained beyond the fellowship. And it's the Insect Discovery Program, and it's, as you would imagine, it's a science enrichment program that uses insects, and it is focusing on first through fifth graders, or really first through third graders, and it's teaching biology using insects. And the way that the program operates is it offers workshops and classroom visits, and they're free. And this program was not a specific goal of the CATS program. It was sort of like the child of the CATS program. It was created by a CATS fellow, Laura Karsten, and she came up with the idea during her first year. She had 2 years of fellowship, and the first year she worked with another outreach program called Marine Discovery, and she worked with a second grade classroom, and she realized that there was a tremendous need for outreach for the younger elementary school grades. There was a lot of outreach for older children, but for the youngest, there was very little. And there was also tremendous need for it to be insect-oriented because of the Arizona State teaching standards. Sorry. So the program goals of insect discovery are what you would expect: to get children excited about science, to give them some basic information about insects. There's some specific concepts that we are trying to teach them that are related to the Arizona science teaching standards. So and this will be different in different states. But it's diversity, adaptation, the idea of habitats, and as other people have talked about, this idea of the process of science, not just the content of scientific knowledge, but the process. Two other goals kind of developed as we went along, and one of them was the idea of giving undergraduates, I know the GK-12 focuses on graduate experience, but giving undergraduates meaningful teaching experience. There's tremendous interest among biology undergrads. Some of them are considering teaching, and a lot of them want to learn more about inquiry-based teaching. And finally, there's the goal of just giving elementary school students, especially those from families where no one has been to college, giving them this positive, welcoming experience with the university, feeling like this is a place where they maybe belong someday. So this is just a quick summary of what Insect Discovery is. Only in its fourth year now. As you can imagine, it started out very small, with serving about 500 students. Last year we managed to expand it by making some changes in the program, and this year we expect to serve about 2,000 students in the Tucson area. So for the first 2 years of the program, there was a CATS fellow assigned to the program to work with me on the program. Last year, the year that we expanded, we actually did not have a CATS fellow, so at least there's some indication that we can survive without the GK-12 CATS program. This year we actually have one again by various funding coincidences, but the program is ending, so we're hoping that we can continue at a fairly about serving about 2,000 students separate from the GK-12. When I was trying to think of what would make a sustainable outreach program, there's about a million different things that you could include, but I was trying to think in the context of GK-12 and in the context of insects, what are some things we want to think about? The biggest is demand. I really appreciate Susan Weller's talking about the constraints that teachers have to operate under when they're looking for ways to enrich their curriculum. Some of them, especially at the elementary school level, are practically under what we call academic lockdown. You have to account for every minute. So you really must go very much based on teacher guidance in terms of what they actually need, not what would be cool. And the state teaching standards in the state of Arizona really make it simple for entomologists because they require every second grader to do a science unit on insects. This is usually not most of the teacher's big comfort zone, so we really had a nice sort of niche for the insect program. Then the limited equipment requirements, if you don't want to have to keep looking for funding, you have to use stuff that's free. Unfortunately, a lot of bugs are free. Though there have been some other examples of wonderful outreach programs using insects that ran out of funding and had too high of a requirement in terms of equipment expenses. So that's something you have to think about when you're trying to figure out what to use. Use what's free. And then speaking of free, labor is one of the big issues when you're dealing with hands-on, inquiry-based science teaching. It is not something that lends itself well to PowerPoints and big classrooms. It really needs a lot of adults. And what is the one resource that we have lots of at universities is undergraduates. You have these smart, excited, from a kid's perspective, much cooler than the faculty resource. And if you can create the right experience, you can get them to help run the outreach program for free. But you have to make it worth their while. So the way Insect Discovery works, and I have to admit that we cheat a little bit in terms of the philosophy of let's try to run on absolutely no funding, is you need to have somebody running it, and ideally it would be somebody in the entomology department faculty. I'm an adjunct faculty in the entomology department, which as you all know means no money, so they do have to find a way to fund me, but so far we have gotten the college to fund me. But if you had a program like this run by a real faculty, you wouldn't have to find extra funding for their salary. And then at the moment, we have an entomology grad student who is doing a lot of the classroom visits, working through the GK-12 CATS fellowship. But that is something that you can, I think, grow beyond. But what's really, really important are the undergraduates. So we have a class that's offered every spring. Several other people were talking about the use of undergraduate classes as a way of of creating outreach and sustaining outreach. So that's what we do at the University of Arizona. We have an upper division biology class, and the undergraduates enroll for 3 credits. And they, after about a month of orientation and training in insect science and pedagogy more than anything else, they actually run the workshops that the elementary school children come to. And I cannot say enough wonderful things about our undergraduates. They really make the program. They're not students of the program, they are colleagues, really. And then the schools reserve the workshops, and the demand is so high at this point, the schools have to reserve workshops in the fall for the following spring. And last fall, the 35 workshops were reserved within 48 hours. So clearly, there's a lot of teachers who want to use this resource. So the way it actually works when the kids come, logistics is always very important, especially when you're dealing with little kids. There are 2-hour workshops, and they're provided at the university in a dedicated classroom. The children arrive, and we do actually use some of our funding to pay for buses for the low-income schools. The children are divided into 4 groups, and each group rotates through the 4 different activity stations, each of which is staffed by 1 or 2 undergraduate preceptors. And at the end, the children do a final drawing activity where we try to assess in some ways how many of the concepts presented have really sunk in. And just because this is a fun part, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we do. The 4 stations, we start out with one that's really very pure inquiry. It's not so much with specific content, but more stimulating curiosity. The children walk into a 6-foot by 6-foot butterfly walk-in enclosure in small groups, and they observe butterflies and get to touch butterflies, a very big deal when you're 7 years old, and develop questions and observations about the butterflies. And this is actually a really interesting experience for the undergraduates. About half of them love this activity, where they just take the kids in and let the butterflies take center stage. And the other half of them, it's pretty much mental torture, because they want to teach something, and they don't like it that everyone's looking at the butterflies and not listening to them explain about the proboscis or something like that. So it's always, I think it's good for them when it's outside of their comfort zone. And then the second half is playing with the hissing cockroaches and the millipedes, because that's just so much fun. And it also reinforces the difference between insects and other arthropods. But it's really more about that emotional connection, like getting over the bugs are gross. And actually, we have to keep them from kissing the cockroaches at this point. I'm pretty sure that's not good for you. Station 2, this is trying to get at the process of science, and this is a little bit hard for some of the younger kids, but we give them a cage of crickets, and they have to, with a lot of what you might call very guided inquiry, develop a choice test experiment to figure out what the preferred food of the crickets is. Of course, you know this is really cheating because crickets are omnivores, but it makes it a nice experiment where you never know what the results will be. And the children graph their results and have to explain what their conclusions are. And the 3rd activity station is diversity, and what we're really trying to get at is just trying to wrap your brain around just how diverse insects are. And again, we use a resource that's very plentiful in entomology departments, which is large collections of pinned insects. And the children in very small, usually in partners, get 20 individually pinned insects, 5 leps, 5 coleoptera, 5 hymenoptera, and 5 orthoptera, and they have to create their own classification system to divide up the insects into whatever, all the brown insects or all the scary insects. And then they also get to look at their insects more closely under the microscope. And this is a really intellectually challenging activity for 6- and 7-year-olds. The idea of creating a system of rules and applying them consistently. So this is actually, I find at this age level, the absolutely hardest activity, which is a surprise. Then the last station that we have so far is adaptation, and this is a really key concept. They get tested all up the wazoo about adaptation in their science teaching standards. And when we originally developed the activity, we thought we would focus on mouth part adaptations, and we do that nice little game where you have the big tablecloth and all the food and all the implements. And I made up one of those sort of fascinating Piaget discoveries, which is a seven-year-old just looks at that as how can I figure out a way to pick up an M&M with a toothpick. It's not about, you know, toothpicks are for raisins. It's like, no, I'm going to get that M&M. And I think for a lot of them, it wasn't just M&M craziness. It was that there's an abstraction that we're just not even thinking about as an adult between a game and a butterfly actually using a, you know, straw-like mouth part to drink nectar. And we tried many different ways of trying to make this more concrete and did all sorts of different games. And as a final activity, the undergraduate preceptors in small groups are supposed to devise a new activity station and test it out on living children, and or they can revise an existing one. And so one group of preceptors decided that we were just looking at the wrong adaptation, that this age group needed something more visually obvious. And so they switched to camouflage. And we've already talked about the different camouflage games you can play with the M&Ms. M&Ms just inspire so much learning at the elementary school level, I think. And so they created a very lifelike, well, lifelike for M&Ms, habitat that was all brown, but it had brown rocks and brown trees and brown objects in it, and then brown versus yellow M&Ms. And that, you could see the light bulb go off in the kids' heads because it wasn't so abstract anymore. It looked like a little diorama with little bugs in it. And it worked. And we also look at pictures that are sort of like, where's Waldo? There's a camouflaged insect in the picture. And then we have colonies of walking sticks and praying mantises, again, where you have to find it. But what was really interesting is that the undergraduates could see what was troubling the kids much better than I could, and they really developed a much more effective teaching tool. And then there's several other activities that they've developed. I know we're running out of time. One of the newest ones they developed was basically having kids poke through a compost heap, because there is nothing more fun than a pile of dirt. And that has been really helpful for getting across the concept of habitat and of, not ecosystem services, because we don't use a word like that with second graders, but the idea of animals having a function. Because a big issue for children and adults is what good are insects? And this is have been a successful one. In the 20 seconds left, I just want to go to talk a little bit about the other GK12 model. This is a new program. We haven't really thought about sustainability yet, but the big issue there, because we're trying to promote the teaching of biology with the concept of evolution sort of in the back of the teacher's mind, there's a lot of interest in the fellows of using insects as tools for teaching evolution or for teaching the components of evolution, because of course second graders or fifth graders don't learn evolution. But we're out of time. All right. Is my acknowledgement. And that's Maxine on the in the picture.
We have time for questions. We have 2 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So the support for your position comes from the college?
Yeah, my position is supported by the college. So there isn't, in that sense, there is buy-in by the university for the program that was created by the GK12. But it would be even nicer, what we're hoping is that this is a model for our both CATS and BIOME graduate students, that when they become faculty, they would think of creating courses like this at other institutions, and they would be, you know, the instructor.
So they come up with the idea of suggesting to faculty that they take this as a broader impact so that that's because of the benefit of working with faculty.
What a brilliant idea. I have not thought of that before. Oh, she was suggesting we could get faculty to contribute their broader impact to insect discovery.
If you write an adequate grant, you always have to have a broader impact. You should put money allocated to show that the program has broader impact. So all the faculty should then put the money to this program and get
to the grant
as a broader impact.
Well, that's a good idea. But just apart from having to support the faculty member who runs Insect Discovery, the other costs are about, it works out to about $1 per child involved, so it's very inexpensive. And you could even recoup that by charging the schools that have higher income communities, like $2 a child to come to the workshop, that at least in Tucson, they will pay that. We haven't gone that route yet, but that's an option.
Yeah,